There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
All right, welcome back to hour two of the Inmates Have Taken Over the Asylum show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show with our guests Chris Fleming and Patrick Burns. Chris Fleming from Dead Famous on the Biography Channel and Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence on formerly Court TV, now True TV. And Pat, your show is going to be back on the air. When? When are they?
We're looking at probably June. We're getting ready to resume production. Actually, it looks like I'm going to be on the road in about 2 weeks here.
And you're going to be filming 4 one-hour specials.
Four one-hour specials for True TV.
Are these like the after-school specials?
Yes,
Patrick gets on drugs.
Yep.
Carla gets fondled in a car by her date, and we have to handle that. Or how does this?
Let's not go there, Dave. They're going to be
after-school specials, Patch.
They're going to be specials.
Dealing with
but not after-school specials.
All right.
They're going to be HBO specials.
Are they going to start rerunning the show again on True TV?
I believe so.
Okay. Do we know of an idea on air date with that?
They've kind of kept me in the dark up until now, and I don't know. All I can say is everybody keep checking your local listings, and we will be back soon. That's all I can say.
And Chris, I heard that they picked up your Psychic Kids cartoon TV show. Is that
That's
right?
That's right.
It's Dave.
Psychic Brats. It's
called. Dave, Tim, Patrick, and Chris as little kids checking out like Scooby-Doo stories, right?
That's it.
Well,
floating rattlers.
Let's talk. Now, you had a question, you said, Tim, for when we came back after the top of the hour.
I got a ton of questions.
Okay.
Let's go with this one. This one comes from Ashley, our intern, who's sitting at home and dreaming over Chris, I believe. Her question is, did any ghost try to enter Chris at the Palmer? Now, of course, I have my thoughts on this.
We'll never say.
Ashley's coming from a place of...
I saw Chris at the bar trying to enter a lot of spirits, but I don't know if I...
Uh-huh.
No, did you have any ghosts try to make formal contact with you, trying to do a walk-in?
No. Actually, right after what happened to Kim, I actually sat down there on the cement in the basement, and I tried to establish a form of communication, whether it was just going to be non-local or if it was going to be an actual walk-in or channel session. Unfortunately, there was no connection made.
Okay. All right. Do you get another question there for us, Timothy?
I have a bunch of them here.
Okay. Let's fire off.
Brandy wants to know, if a spirit can cause physical harm in all actuality, they could kill you, right? I am new to asking questions. Sorry if that seems like a juvenile one.
Well, I'm still alive.
There are cases of people being severely hurt and possibly killed. Very, very rare. The only thing I think that could happen is someone's pushed down the stairs, right, Patrick?
Pushed
down the stairs.
Patrick,
Patrick was. We were at the Stanley Hotel.
Here it goes.
In our last event, and I was grabbing something there in the kitchen, and Patrick was coming down the stairs with all his equipment. I say, hey, you got all your stuff? He's like, yeah. I said, well, we need to get over there because we got to do the investigation. All of a sudden, you hear this, ah, boom, 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 boom. I turn the corner and I look, and Patrick looks at his hand that's all covered with Starbucks coffee, and he looks up at him and goes, I was pushed. Something pushed
that's
him down
the stairs. Quite exactly the way I remember it, but we'll humor Chris on this one. I believe that something did push me down the stairs in the presidential suite where we were staying. And that is one important point that I wanted to bring out is I think that the instances when somebody is injured by a spirit, it's not necessarily the spirit that's doing it. Maybe it's a secondary reaction. Somebody gets scared or startled, and they stumble and they trip and they fall and injure themselves that way. You know, they turn around not expecting to see a ghost, and there's a ghost right there, and they stumble and injure themselves. I think that's far more common than, actually being injured.
Ghost Adventures, we watched that show. Yeah, on that show, we watched Ghost Adventures with the Nick, Aaron, and Zach when they went to the Goldfield Hotel.
Correct.
The brick actually picked up and flew across the room, and the board started to levitate. So, in effect, I mean, if ghosts can propel things like that, there is a very real chance that they could fling a knife or...
Yes, people have been hit.
Right. Could be hit and hurt very hard, correct?
Correct.
Is there, is that, again, would you say that if they're throwing things nasty like that at you, that that's a malevolent, or is it them just trying to get your attention again?
Possibly they are trying to cause some bodily harm, or they actually just want to get you the heck out of there. I mean, there was a family that I knew when I spoke to them back in the late 90s in New Jersey were chased out of their house. His wife was pushed down the stairs, broke both legs, was in the hospital for a long period of time, had surgeries, pins put in, everything. They had also their furniture was pushed out the front door. Became so violent in the house with crosses being turned upside down, forks and knives being thrown at them, the stove going on, possibly causing a fire, that they actually had to move out of the house. So you can deal with some type of negative spirits or entities that could cause harm. Very rare, but it does happen. Look at the entity case with Barry Taft.
Right.
Remarkable, remarkable case. I spoke to a couple people, and I'm in the middle of something right now where some other people are being harmed. You know, it can happen. It's no different than what goes on in our world.
Let me mention this too real quick. Now, you guys are going to be at OmegaCon in March. Mm-hmm. I'll be out there. Jay and Grant are going to be out there at OmegaCon. We're going to be doing the event, and that takes place March 14th through the 16th, 2008, at the Sheraton Convention Center in Birmingham, Alabama. You can check that out at OmegaCon.us. Again, that's OmegaCon.us, OmegaCon.us. There's going to be a ton of paranormal speakers there. You can get them online. You can get your tickets for only $30 if you go right now. There's going to be a great opportunity to be out there. You get Jason Hawes, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, John Zaffis, Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns. I'll be out there helping to MC. Of course, we have the lovely Deb Collard from Naps, she's going to be out there doing talks. I believe Grant Wilson will be out there. I believe even Steve, I think, Gonzalez is supposed to be a part of it. Psychic medium Chip Coffee, Reese Christian will also be out there. There's some other paranormal authors that will be taking place. Plus, there's a lot of great actors and actresses that will be showing up to do autograph sessions. So, again, check that out. You can go to OmegaCon.us. OmegaCon.us, and I'll tell you, there's going to be a really great couple there. You want to go see Michael and Marty Perry. They are the mediums. They work in tandem, a great little deal. We've had them on our show before, and we're having them out at a couple of our events, but it'll be a great opportunity for you to meet them there. We'll also have the rock and roll paranormal ghost god himself, Mr. Keith Age, and the lovely Wyricks. Lisa and Heidi Wyrick and Joyce Cathy will be out there as well, talking about their book, The Veil, which talks about the haunting in Georgia that took place. It's amazing. And, of course, Ghostbuster Patty Starr will be there. So I want to thank Deb Collard from Naps and from OmegaCon for giving me all that information. And, again, you can check that out at OmegaCon.us so that everybody else can come on out there and see us and hang out. Guys, you guys are getting a lot of calls. How can people contact you, Chris, so if they want to bring you in for conventions, conferences, talks, you know, at their schools, businesses, places of fun, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, just go to my website. You know, just type in my name in Google, Chris Fleming with one M, or just go to my website, Unknown Mag or unknownmagazine.com, and right there on the left-hand side for contact, click on that, and it tells you how to get a hold of me. Simple as that. Thank you.
And Patrick, how about with you?
Usually they can email me info@ghosthounds.com. They can also contact me on my MySpace profile, myspace.com/ghostgeek.
Okay, great. Yeah, and that's a great way to contact both of the boys. As a matter of fact, you guys are willing to do talks together, right? And that's kind of what I wanted to do tonight.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to you guys about the use of psychics and technology on a paranormal investigation. And actually, I want to kind of reverse roles on you tonight. Patrick, being a techie, the ghost geek, going out there with all this equipment and knowing how to do, and we watch Haunting Evidence, you're the go-to guy for all the technical aspect. What is your thoughts about having a sensitive on an investigation? What do you feel their role should be, And how often do you think you should use a sensitive on an investigation? I don't mean criminal like you guys do on your show, but I mean on a regular, hey, can you please come check our house? We have things going on, doors rattling, windows going up and down, windows or lights switching on and off. What do you need?
Well, my mentor in this field, Dr. Hans Holzer, believes it is imperative to use a psychic or a medium on an investigation. I don't necessarily agree with everything that Dr. Holzer says. He comes from a different era, and his school of thought of paranormal investigation is vastly different from my own. He didn't have all these portable, wonderful portable electronics that we have that we can use in this day and age. So the fact that the man doesn't even own a personal computer, you know, kind of sums it up right there. He really doesn't understand the technology, but he's had a great deal of success in his career utilizing his techniques. Myself personally, there was a point in time when I really wasn't too concerned with what a psychic or a sensitive might say, because there was no way for me to necessarily quantify that. You're talking about a subjective interpretation of a situation, and there really was no way, I thought, to quantify that. And my eyes were opened up a number of years ago by a psychic that we had speaking at Ghost Talk, and during their presentation they talked about how really working with a psychic and being a technically minded ghost hunter, working with mediums can be a win-win situation, because the medium can tell you when they're sensing activity, what the hot spots in a location might be. And in turn, you can confirm their validate their interpretations by setting up your equipment in that location. And if you happen to measure activity in that location, then you've just corroborated what they believe what was going on in that location. So it can really be a win-win situation. I kind of did a shift in my whole mindset as to how to conduct an investigation, and lo and behold, very soon after that, I ended up getting cast on Haunting Evidence, which of course is exactly the whole premise of the show. It's getting a psychic interpretations of a location, and then the technical ghost hunter going in afterwards to sort of confirm and firm up what they believe they were sensing in that location.
So do you think it's important then for a good investigative team to go in first and investigate, then employ a psychic to come in and try to validate what they're getting?
Well, there are so many different schools of thought there. If you're going into a location completely cold, which I've kind of done a 180-degree turn. I used to be of the mindset that I wanted to have all the historical information that I could possibly gather about a location before I conducted an investigation. Now I kind of do the exact opposite. Going into the Palmer House, I deliberately made it a point not to read up anything about the location, about the activity that's been reported there, simply because I don't want to have any preconceived notions about where I'm going to find activity. If I happen to pick up an EVP, what the voice might be saying, what name they might be actually be calling out. So I've kind of taken a reverse approach to that, and I think if the psychic goes in as well cold as the investigator, then neither of you are front-loaded, and any evidence that you get that is confirmed by the historical data that's been collected there, I think makes a much more compelling and stronger argument.
All right. Chris, dealing with the psychic side, I know that you're also very tech savvy. You know, you like it. To think outside the box and use things like K2 meters. Do you feel people are relying too heavily now on equipment and maybe not allowing their natural abilities and their own senses to do the real ghost hunting?
I think that's slowly starting to change, and I think when I had the opportunity to go on the Ghost Hunters, you know, of course being very controversial, it created an impact where there was a lot of skepticism at first, but people are starting to now become more open to it in understanding that psychics, sensitives can be used in these situations, because we're dealing with something that is so unknown that can't be really registered with science, by science, can't be proven or disproven by science, that you have to have someone that is sensitive to that. And by bringing in an individual and using scientific equipment, you're covering both spectrums. You want to have that scientific equipment support that person that's in there. You know, but there's some great stuff out there. You know, and I think that's what was great when I was on the ghost hunters. I had a chance for they got to use some of that scientific equipment to support what I was getting. And like Patrick said, we are going into a new era of investigating where you have to use a sensitive or psychic. Now, make sure that that sensitive or psychic is true. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure that they are someone that is really not just a...
Right, but how do you test that, Chris? I mean, I have so many people that say that they're psychics and sensitives that come to me on a daily basis that, you know, are about as psychic and sensitive as a doorknob.
You're very easy to do, actually. It's very easy. Right. You take them into a location cold yourself. You go into a location that has reported activity, and you test them. You see what do they pick up? What are they picking up in these different locations? And then you go back and you do the historical research, and you see, does it compare historically? You know, obviously no psychic is ever going to be 100% accurate, because there is the subjective conscious mind that interjects ideas and things coming in. It's very difficult for most psychics to get a purely subjective psychic reading, which mm-hmm. comes from the subconscious mind. But, you know, when you go in, you basically do the historical research and you try to validate, okay, how accurate were they going into this location? Because, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. There are a lot of truly gifted people out there like Chris, and then there's a lot of wannabes out there that wish they were.
You know what I'd like to see, though, Dave, guys, thinking of this, is I would like to eventually see that there's some institution, university or whatever, that offers a certificate that states that you've been tested and analyzed and that you do have an ability. I'd like to see that one day, you know, because then that would verify that those people have gone through the tests and results and have proven to the university that they have those abilities.
But wouldn't the problem be with that, Chris? Because I've thought of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sensitivity is subjective, right? If yeah. I'm a really good psychic, you're a really good psychic, we walk into the same place, and I think I've heard you mention when a ghost or a spirit wants to make itself known to you, it could make itself known to you, Chris, but not to Patrick. Or it could make itself, you're the psychic sensitive and you don't pick anything up, yet Patrick starts whipping off pictures and there's a full-blown apparition in front of him. How can we test that when maybe just today the spirit didn't want you to know?
That happens. That happens. There'll be times where I get nothing, and there might be another sensitive psychic with me, and they're getting something. You know, how do we
know
they're
feeling,
not? You know,
when you're in an investigation with more than one sensitive,
mm-hmm.
and they start, oh yeah, I'm getting something over here, and blah 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 blah. Is it hard for ego to check out when you're not picking it up, or do you just shut up and try to experience with it and open yourself up to it, or do you at times say, yeah, they're full of crap. There's nothing there. I don't sense anything there.
Both. I mean, it could be times where I'm like, all right, I don't, you know, what are they talking about, you know? And then sometimes I can be like Napoleon Dynamite, you know, like, God, you know, I can't believe I'm not picking this up, you know? And I get mad at myself. I, you know, become self-critical. And I'm like, what's wrong with me, you know? Because something's happening. They're getting something. I'm getting nothing, you know? But that happens. You think about it, Babe Ruth, what, struck out 75% of the time? You're not going to get everything all the time. I try, but right. It doesn't always work that way. But I would love, I mean, I'm at this point now in my life where, you know, I would love to go to some university that does all these tests, and not this James Randi crap and all this other stuff. I'm talking about somebody that has legitimate research, has proven that this stuff exists, that can take those same experiments and test me. I would love to do that because I want to learn. I want to know what can I do or what can I do.
Yeah, when you go into a test like the James Randi organization, they're already cynics. They've already made up their mind.
Chris, you just said something that would slit your own throat on it.
Why?
How many times then would a psychic be allowed to take a test in a year or in a 5-year span before they get that certificate? Because, you know, here's something. Today you cannot tune in. You're cloudy, whatever. You go in to take your test for certification, and you're just not there. And uh-huh. they say, fail, and they hand you a slip.
Good point.
And then, you know, do you have to wait 6 months before you can try it again? Or do you just keep coming in every day till you pass it?
Right.
If so, couldn't we all, you know, I'm not a psychic. I don't claim
saying.
To be a sensitive.
I see what you're saying.
But I had a connection with my mom 20 years ago when she had a massive seizure. When I drove past the street that night on New Year's Eve, I kept having visions of my mom collapsing, of being pulled out of the driveway in an ambulance, of all these things happening. I forced myself home at about 2:30 in the morning after I dropped off all my friends being sober cab, got home. Safe, okay, there's no ambulance here. Both my parents' cars are here. I went into the kitchen. My mom came shuffling out in the hall with one eye closed, her hair all messy, and How's it? Oh, good, you're home safe. I said, yeah, I drove everybody home. I, you know, everything's good. I just wanted to, you know, have a quick drink, you know, water, and I'm going to go to bed. Well, hold on, I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll come out and join you. She turned around and boom, straight down. She had a massive grand mal seizure.
Okay.
I had been sensing that all night. I'm not a psychic. That night I was tuned in.
Okay.
How do we know that Patrick just didn't draw a lucky hair out of his ass that day and he hit something and he gets certified and you're really good, but today you had a cold? A week from now, you're getting a car accident on your way in, and you're kind of shaking, and you got a little whiplash, and your head's kind of throbbing, and you go to do the test, and you fail again, and you get put out. You're not allowed to do it, but because Patrick was on that one day, he's certified, and you're not.
Well, I mean, that's definitely something to think about. But what you're talking about, what you got was a premonition. A lot of people do get premonitions, whether in dreams or those feelings of someone they're very, very close to. At that point, I wouldn't say that's a consistency of being psychic. There are people that constantly have visions, constantly can sense ghosts around and can pick up things. Those are the types of things that people, I believe, would try to test for these types of experiments or getting that certificate. And I think the experiments would be set up to be on an ongoing trial basis to where it wouldn't be just you go in there one day and you get a certificate. It'd have to be over a period of time that the research has been done on you to make sure that under various different conditions that you continue to have this ability. And it would also test you in a way where you are good under this condition, but you're not good under that condition. Because okay. There's some senses I know, they can pick up emotions, but yet they can't sense when the ghost is around. Some people can communicate and see the ghosts, when some people can't see them, but they can hear them. So you would have to be tested under varying conditions.
Okay. So it would be almost like an MD with a specialization. You're a certified,
yes.
You're a certified, yes. PSY with a CA, clairaudient gift, and a CV, clairvisual,
right.
But not, right. You know, so it would be stated that way. You would like to see something, yeah, like that.
Okay. There's many psychics and sensitives I've talked to that, well, I'm really good at this. I can't channel, but right. I can hear them and see them.
Well, let's get more into that. We got to take our first break here in the first, or for the second hour. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town with our live guests in studio, Chris Burns and Patrick Fleming. I keep messing you two up. Christopher Fleming and Patrick Burns. We'll be right back with more.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the darkness on the edge of town. Stay tuned. There is more to come. The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the 7-bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're here with you live every Sunday night from 10 to midnight Central Time. If you can't listen live, make sure that you check out our archived shows where we post all of our shows for the last 2 years. You can also go to planetparanormal.com, click on the Darkness Radio tab, and you actually can subscribe there for our podcast feeds so that you can never miss an episode. It'll alert you when all the new episodes are posted, and that way you can listen and download them and take them in your iPod, burn them onto CDs, whatever you want to, since you got them with you. So I do appreciate you listening in this evening. We have a very special show going on. We've got guests in the studio. We've got Chris Fleming from Dead Famous and Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence. We've, of course, got producer and board monkey par excellence, Mr. Tim Dennis, sitting in. And we're talking about using psychics and sensitives and technology on a paranormal investigation. Chris, I'm curious real quick. I'd like to know, is there a time of year where you seem to be more in tune, or is there a time of day that you can be more in tune? Is there certain weather conditions? If it's raining out with all the electrical magnetic field going on, mm-hmm, do you feel yourself more open during that time than you would, say, at 28 below zero in Minnesota?
Yeah, no kidding. Well, of course, you know, outside environmental conditions are going to play a big part of it, you know, mentally, physically. But spiritually, I've always found that the fall, and not necessarily because it's almost close to Halloween, but the fall tends to be a time where I think things get to settle down, you know, things that are going on in individuals' life. But the atmosphere, the air, everything seems to bring upon more of a concentration from a psychic aspect. When there's thunderstorms, electrical, that definitely does amp things up. I don't necessarily know why, but I think it's pretty cool. Full moons tend to, because the gravitational pull on the Earth, possibly that does something with the dimensions and makes things happen. Patrick, can you compliment on that? I don't know.
The environmental variables. The phases of the moon, I don't know. We've gotten activity, you know, when it's been a full moon, when it's been a new moon, when, it's the moon is waxing or waning. I don't know how much that plays a part of it. But one of the things I notice, I have a theory about, is the reason we see a higher instance of paranormal activity at night, around midnight particularly, of course, the highest point that the sun is during the day is referred to as high noon. It's not always 12 o'clock. Sometimes it varies by as much as an hour one way or the other. But that's about the time that we see most of the paranormal activity in terms of hauntings, is between about the hours of 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock a.m. At least that's in my experience. And the reason for that, I have a theory that during the day, of course, we can get paranormal activity, but I think we see a higher instance of it at night during this time when there's the most shielding between us and the sun. I think that the radiation that is given off by the solar winds can and does disrupt or cancel out this this paranormal activity, because as we know, most of this activity that we measure is very subtle. And it would make sense then that if the solar radiation is enough to cancel it out, that you might see a higher instance of it around midnight.
The one thing I have to comment on is, you know, growing up as a kid, having all my experiences, I was always very concerned. I would look at the clock and see what time it was when these things, just before they began and when they stopped. And I always found that any time between 3 o'clock in the morning till 5:30, these events would occur. While I was growing up, it rarely, if ever, happened afterwards or before. It was always that time period that I noticed things were going on. What does that mean? I don't know.
Is there a place, Chris, that you're more in tune when you go to, like, the Stanley Hotel, which mm-hmm. is, you know, higher elevation, the geomagnetic force, or what is it built on, Patrick? Limestone. What the Stanley? What's the majority?
There's a high instance of. I believe that the rock itself is granite, and there's a high instance apparently in the soil, in the rock itself, of magnetite.
Do you find that can amp up your abilities, Chris, more than, say, you know, being in the bowels of the Queen Mary ship, you know, surrounded in a metal ship?
I don't think it's really varied in that sense. I've never done some long-term experiments determining if me standing on a rock or standing on a wooden house has anything to do with it. It's just basically my frame of mind and what I'm tapping into.
So you don't feel that, selling crystals and people are big into crystals and pendulums and all these things, and they feel that it opens them up more. Do you think that that's just a psychological thing?
I think so. But I do think that crystals do play an important part that we don't fully understand yet. I'd love to know exactly how they can be used in that sense. I've used some crystals during some of my consultations and everything, and then there's times I didn't have it and I got the same results. So I think it's just what type of mindset you put yourself in. When you look at some mediums and psychics that use crystal balls, they use certain stones, they use crosses, they're putting their faith and trust and belief in something that is then helping them connect. There's some psychics don't have to use anything and they'll just connect. Whatever is necessary for you to put you in that frame of mind that allows you to open up and to make that type of connection is what's going to work for you.
Okay. One more question I'll direct to you right now, Chris. Maybe you know this. One of the guests in the chat room wants to know, they've heard the term, what's it say here?
Dead time.
Can you ask what it means to be called a white light during an EVP session?
I've never heard of being called a white light. I've heard of, you know, dealing with white light from the other side, the spiritual realm, because all creation came from the light, you know, pure, unconditional love. Once you strip everything away, the only thing that exists is the light and love. That's it. That's where we all came from. The farther we get away from that, we get into more darkness and darker things, and our vibrations slow down. So
could it mean that you're just better at getting somebody, you know, like Mark and Debbie Constantino, they seem to draw EVPs very easily, as opposed to Tim and I, who don't get EVPs very often at all. Could it be that their white lights, are they just attract it like a moth to a flame? They just happen to be that kind of conduit?
If that's what you're talking about, quite possible, yeah. I do know, while I was doing Dead Famous, with all the type of EVPs I was getting, it was very intriguing, interesting to hear some of the remarks of some of the ghosts, the EVPs they were leaving. It was very educational for me in understanding how I was doing my investigating. Sometimes they'd say, here he comes, you know, he walks like a teacher, you know, that type of stuff, where they were aware of my presence. And in further investigating and communicating with them, I found out that they don't necessarily see us as a physical person. They see us like kind of like a thermal camera, where they see our aura, they see our energy. That's what they see. They don't see this person with arms, legs, wearing a, you know, Ronnie James Dio t-shirt. You know, they just see this type of energy that can glow and have a vibrancy that differs from person to person.
Well, Patrick, that kind of leads me into a question for you in the techie realm. I'm curious, if these things are in a certain visual spectrum that allows us, that we can't see them with the naked eye, and you're doing a lot of work with IR photography and thermal cams, which allows us to maybe see different spectrums that are outside our normal visual spectrums. If they truly live in that zone, by basking them with IR light, can we be affecting them? It'd be kind of like the same of me looking for you, standing right in front of you and turning on a sun lamp. Bam! Can that be what sends them off, taken off the other direction? Could we actually be hindering our investigations by using technology to see them more clearly? That bothers them.
That's a great point, Dave. And one of the things that I've taught people in using these night vision cameras, if you want to use a cheap, high intensity infrared light source, excuse me, for a camera that has night shot, you can go to Home Depot, you can go to Walmart, you can buy a $7 heat lamp, which gives off a very, very subtle, very dark shade of red, reddish orange when it's turned on, that's visible to our eyes. But to a camera set in infrared mode, it looks like you've got a 1500-watt floodlight turned on in your backyard when you do this. And I've started thinking along those lines, Dave, because I haven't really gotten much activity, and I'm wondering, is it too intense? Is it too much infrared that we are adding to the fold? Maybe there's a sweet spot. Maybe there is. Maybe there's a point of threshold where you have enough light to illuminate your environment, and you shouldn't go any further than that.
There is. In some of my communication with spirits, we have asked that, and they've stated that sometimes too powerful can it affects them. Their frequency vibrations.
Repels
we've done
them.
Experiments where we've had multiple cameras with different settings of IR. You know, some of the group in CPR, we've done this where we have very illuminative, bright IR that fills up the whole room. You can see every detail. And then we have some a little bit lower grade. And in the lower grade, we were getting more interesting anomalies that had a form of consciousness and a purpose. While in the bright, bright IR in the room right next to it, as they travel into it, you wouldn't see them. It washes them out. They're gone.
What about a type of a sonar for ghosts? Is there a way, Patrick or Chris, that you guys think, If we bombard something that's not there, I mean, essentially that's what the stealth is, right? The stealth bomber flies in, it's so thin in the way it's made, so that most radar waves will pass over it or around it. But what
or
we
are
find
absorbed
is when,
by it.
Right, but when we find when we hit it flat on with things, you know, like bats, they fly around, they can't see, they do that, and it goes forward, it bounces off, and they can see basically what's in front of
Understood.
Them. Is there a way to maybe use sound amplification to create a template for us to see the spirits on?
Quite possible.
You know,
Why
that
not?
We can hit them with that and then use lighting technology at the same time. You know, because we're always dealing in frequency, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if we're able to use a frequency generator that'll cause different sound effects, and Tim, maybe we can get you to weigh on this too with sounds. If we know that EVPs are heard at this end and this end, if we amp the sounds up in those ends of the spectrum, and then we use video to make photographs, could we maybe pick up more of what's there? I mean, do you guys have a thought or a theory on that?
That's possible, yeah.
Absolutely. The problem is this stuff, it manifests in so many different ways. Okay,
mm-hmm.
The energy, it might affect a drop in the temperature or a rise in the temperature, or perhaps it's disrupting the magnetic fields, or perhaps, you know, it's there are such a myriad of ways that this this energy, whatever it is causing, manifests itself. The problem is which way, in what range of energies, what range of these energies are we going to detect the anomaly? Obviously, in an ideal world, we would have an array of instruments measuring every possible variable. And that's sort of what I'm trying to get at with my rig that I work with on Haunting Evidence, is I'm trying to document and I'm trying to log as many different environmental variables as I can. But establishing where they're going to make their presence known. Is it going to be a temperature fluctuation? Is it going to be audible? Is it going to be an EMF drop? Is it going to be a change in the humidity? That's the problem that we run into. It's, you know, it, because it is paranormal, there is no certainty to it. There's right. You don't know really what area that you need to concentrate on.
The one thing I'd like to ask too is anybody out there that's listening that is heavy into this research and science, that understands exactly what we're talking about at even a more knowledgeable level than what we're describing, please email Patrick and myself and get a hold of us. Let us know any information, research that you've accumulated, because both Patrick and I like to share information, and we're very heavy into this and furthering our investigations. And if we all work together, that'd be great. And of course, definitely be credited on that. So please,
absolutely.
Emails.
Well, you know, when you're driving on the highway and it's hot, right? And coming off that asphalt, we get that wavy line pattern.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what they call oasis, right? It gives you
the
thought that you're seeing something there. Could it be that we maybe are seeing things there, that's a visual light spectrum from a parallel universe, that by us distorting, that the heat is distorting and it's actually causing the ability for us to see that?
Why not?
What's
there? Of course it's a different universe, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a different dimension. Parallel dimension, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think then we can, using that kind of technology, I mean, is there a way for us to create a wave pattern? You know, they're actually showing, and I know in Vegas they've got a couple of the hotels where they have a sheet of water. It's like a waterfall that they project a movie on.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
And the movie stops, and it's a beautiful picture quality.
I saw that
and it's mystical. There's got to be a way we could create a template for them to.
They're not only doing that, Dave. There's also a smaller condensed version of that that basically projects up like a water vapor. It's almost like a humidifier,
right?
With this stream of water vapor coming up. It's a smaller unit, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 feet long, and they actually project a movie onto that, and you can pass your hand through it. It's almost like a three-dimensional display, holographic display, like you saw Princess Leia in the first Star Wars movie. Yeah, I agree totally. There's, I think in our lifetime there's going to be some sort of
absolutely
very significant technological breakthrough that is going to just completely set mainstream science on its ass, and they're going to say, "Whoa, you know, I honestly believe we are on the cusp of a huge discovery in this field."
Well, that's why it's so imperative for people. And you know, our good friend Todd Sheets over at Night Watch pimps us out on his show constantly, you know, about unity in the field of the paranormal. And it isn't just let's share so that we can all share in a piece of the pie of finding ghosts. It's let's share in ideas. There are so many great technicians. Like you had your K2 meter.
Mm-hmm.
I believe his name is Doug from Pasadena Paranormal Research, right, with Sid's group,
mm-hmm.
Who said, let's put a switch on the side. Mm-hmm. And then he's manipulating it even further from there.
It's great.
To change things.
It's great.
And if we work together on this, there's got to be enough in the science realm that we can pull these things out and if we work together and each piece together. I mean, that may be the whole cosmic puzzle, right? You're given a piece of the puzzle.
Of course.
Frank Sumption's given a piece of the puzzle.
Of course.
Patrick is given a piece of the puzzle with IR photography. You've got the psychic sensitive. He's got the box. If we pull this together, who's to say that maybe the Frank's box, the sound it's creating, is creating the cloak that you can now see through? And how can we bring it through psychically, sure, you know, through LCD crystal screening or things like that to allow these things to project themselves?
I just got an idea.
Okay.
If anybody wants to put this together, Dave, anybody out there is putting together an event in the future, possibly maybe this summer in the fall, where we have everybody in the field that is working on certain contraptions, devices, technology, get together, go specifically to this event over 2 or 3 days where we can share diagnose, analyze, test.
Right, in a free event. These, I think what we do is we just work it
all
out.
All of this. I think that would be, God, that would be awesome.
Right. Now everybody brings their experiment of what they think would be a good communication
Scientists
tool.
Can come, parapsychologists. We just spend the entire weekend testing all these things at some location and figuring out how it works and putting our heads together. That'd be awesome.
I would love it. I'd be all over that.
Timmy, I know you don't have a microphone. Maybe you could speak up for us. So on this, with magnetic fields, right? We use magnetic fields to bulk, to clean tape, right? To clean digital imaging off of audio, or off of video, off of hard drives, off of computers, off of things like that, right?
You even use it to degauss your TV.
Right. So that wipes it out. Is there a way to make a reverse degauss, which will actually, instead of disrupting, can actually strengthen a magnetic field so that what is there can be seen more easily?
Well, there are ways to strengthen a magnetic field, but do you want to? I mean, there's a certain amount of danger to a large amount of magnetic energy. So.
Right, but if we're trying to create that template for the spirits to come through on, if we boost a magnetic field, because, right, we're using electromagnetic field detectors to try to find spirit activity. If we... Can we, not theoretically, but can we, are there products out there right now, Tim, that you're aware of that can actually boost instead of disrupting a magnetic field?
Well, what about the ions machine? I remember Grant and Jason, we were talking about, we do an investigation. They had a machine that puts more ions into the air.
Oh, right, right,
negative
right.
Ion generator. Okay.
Is that the thing they're using on Ghost Hunters International right now?
Yeah, that's actually been...
None of us have watched it. We're all like,
I don't know.
So much for unity, fellas.
Well, no, we're busy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't watch TV, to be perfectly honest. I occasionally miss episodes of Haunting Evidence, too, so...
Aw.
Aw.
Yeah.
No, the bombardment of a location with negative ions, that's something that actually Joshua P. Warren has been doing for years. He put out a documentary that he produced himself. It was called Alone in a Haunted House a number of years ago. And he did just that. He took back when they had vinyl records, they would have that gun that would put out a stream of negative ions to remove the static cling on an LP record.
Right.
Well, he goes into a location with one of these devices and basically sprays a cloak of ions, of negative ions through the air. And then he had a video camera set up on night shot, and he had these orbs doing these wild things around in there. And it really does beg the question, is this the cause of the activity, or is it the catalyst?
Well, I've talked about this since the first show, Tim. I would like to get... Can you still get the degauss guns? The handheld degauss guns?
Unless you're professional.
Maybe we can find them on eBay. I would love to be called into a home or a place where it's known to have a residual haunting, mm-hmm. which we consider like that looped in time haunting that always happens.
Mm-hmm.
And to go in, you know, if we always see Grandma's ghost sitting in the rocking chair... She doesn't seem to interact, but she's always in the rocking chair looking out the window, and we can talk to her, or she goes about her business like we're not there. Both of us get on each side of the chair with the degauss gun, degauss that area so that you're using two degauss guns facing each other, Tim, right? To do that, to totally disrupt that area and do that over a period of a few days and then see if that disrupts that part of the environment where the ghost was making itself known.
All right, well, here's the one thing I know from some of the research that we did is some of the things such as black light, certain different type of radio waves, frequencies, and even the LED flashlights freaks them out. It disrupts their vibration. In some ways, it's even painful because they're made of a certain energy form that takes a shape. And depending upon the frequency of these devices, it disrupts them to where they start getting torn apart in a way, where they run off. If we start doing stuff like that, it might be considered a threat in some ways where we might feel we're attacking them because we're affecting them.
Now, right, that's why I said going to a residual haunting where we know grandma isn't interacting with people, but she's always rocking in her chair at the same time every night or whatever. You know, not something that we would, you know, not an intelligent haunting that interacts with us or seems to take notice of us. But, you know, we know every night grandma comes through the kitchen, takes her teeth out, puts them on the counter and goes to bed. And we keep seeing that image every night. Is that just trapped in a pattern matrix? Can we disrupt that pattern matrix?
That's a good idea.
Can we enhance that pattern matrix?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier with the ion. Now, look at Mark Macy using the Illuminator. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really understand this, and I'd love to get one and pull it apart. But sure. Basically, Tim, do you remember what it is? It's basically just using water, right? It's I don't remember how this thing works. What it's like a water coil in there, okay. Right, that puts out that static bubble that allows when he does the spirit photography for the imagery to come through.
Oh, wow.
You know, we've had him at our events, and he takes those Polaroid pictures, and you'll see your face with a distortion.
Okay.
Now, what I always find interesting is he says that it's ghost faces. Everybody's picture I looked at, and I would love for people to scan their pictures and email them to Tim and I at dave@darknessradio.com. Shoot them over to Chris and Patrick if you've had your photos taken by Mark Macy. The one thing I challenge you to look at is I noticed that the image most times to me looks like an older version of you. Not like a distorted, but literally where you can see a ghost image of your own face, but the bag lines are deeper, the crow's feet are out. You know,
you don't have plastic surgery over there?
No, thank God. Beverly Hills 9021. Ooh,
9021
will be doing the work that way. But you know, I'm curious if that static bubble it's creating is opening up portals. You know, and if we've got maybe we could even get Mark Macy with his illuminator, Josh Warren
definitely.
With the diffuser,
definitely,
you know,
yeah.
the negative ions, try to put these things together. If we can amp this stuff up. I mean, look, we had two Frank's boxes. We had the illuminator, and we had three or four psychic sensitives on staff at that Stanley event when all hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm.
Staff members of the Stanley that told me that they'd been there 7 years and never had an experience and thought it was just a bunch of BS and a way to get people to come stay that.
Right.
They were coming up to me going, I don't know what the hell you guys did, but you got to knock it off because I've never had an experience here. And I'm working in the at the front desk, and all of a sudden somebody starts playing the piano. I go in there to yell at them. They're not supposed to be on the piano, and I walk in the room, and the piano's playing itself.
Right.
I mean, we amped that place.
Of course we did.
With all that stuff. So that is a good proof that this stuff occurs.
Well, you know, and that brings me to an interesting point, Dave. I used to work in radio many years ago and worked in an older radio station in northern Wisconsin. And almost all of the electronics that they had in that place was, you know, outdated. It was from the 1970s, even in some instances the 1960s. We had racks and racks of amplifiers and compressors and all the stuff that you would find in an older radio station. I don't even begin to know what the electrical bill was for this place, because
right.
all of it was just constantly turned on. We had paranormal activity in that place. And
sure.
This is something that I hear about a lot of radio stations, is that they have activity go on. A lot of radio stations are reported to be haunted. And I'm thinking this energy, this electricity creates this.
Especially ones with transmitters right on the building.
Absolutely.
Right?
We're bathing in RF radiation right now. Right now our testicles are being fried.
That's why I feel so warm.
Oh, I got a headache. That explains the headache. Okay.
Behind us right now, if you look through this window, you've got enough RF radiation
yes.
right there to
cook a turkey.
Yeah, exactly.
Testicles. No, but
what's in this board.
So it is something that I've heard from more and more people that work in radio. They say, you know, we've got this radio station and we've had activity that we've reported. I mean, I had an experience when I was working at the station in Merrill, Wisconsin. I walked into the studio to relieve the guy that was had been working till midnight. I had the midnight to 6 a.m. shift, and this guy ended up coming out of the studio as I was walking in, and I said, hey, how's it going? And I heard this woman's voice, or I should say girl's voice, sound like somebody about 18, 19 years old, say, mock my words, repeat what I had said, said, hey, how's it going? And I got this grin on my face as I walked by our foyer, our waiting room, and I grinned. I'm like, oh, Jeff, that sly devil, he's got a girl in the studio with him tonight. And I'm like, well, I'm going to go hang up my coat and I'll do the polite thing. I'll introduce myself. And I go back there and there's nobody in there. And I said, Jeff, where's the girl? He's like, what girl? I said, you got a girl up here. He's like, I wish. You know, this is one experience that I had myself. And Chris is doing a sweep right now through the studio, and he's making note, case in point, of all the RF that is in here. My laptop,
yeah, most of my laptop.
Is you know, giving off a huge hit of EMF. Probably the mixing board over there in front of Tim.
Yeah, some of the other stuff is pretty well insulated, but of course the laptop, which is very dangerous. Why you shouldn't have it right on your lap.
I have a lot of stuff underneath the board, Chris, if you want to dive under here and take a look.
Not in this lifetime.
You know,
Tim.
I'd like to.
Look at the
I'm not.
Let me mention something, as a matter of fact.
I'll show you something.
Hey, guys, hold on one second. Hang on. We have a new advertiser I'd like to mention as well that we're going to be working with here. For any of you that are fans of the TV show, The X-Files, if you guys remember Dean Haglund, who was on there, who played Langley, one of the lone gunmen, he has created an invention for laptops. It's called a chill pack, and you actually put it underneath your laptop, and it draws the heat away from you to keep you safe. So you can check it out on his website and go. I don't have the link up right now. I'll make sure to get that up on our site for next week. But it is, I believe it's called a chill pack. And they're like $20, well worth it. I got one at the Stanley, and I love the thing. Did you guys pick any of those
up? No, I didn't.
Or at the Queen Mary,
rather. Yeah.
They're great, and it's a very simple item. It's protected so that no condensation will get into your computer or bother your computer. But you keep it on your lap, and it can go back to being a laptop, and it keeps you safe and buffered from the nastiness of
that
stuff. So that's a good point. Yeah. But we've got, Tim, only about 5 minutes left, if that.
Darn. This is great.
We're asking about the next event, where we're going next.
The next event that we have slated is at the end of February. We're going to be off at the Queen Mary, but that is sold out. We're back at the Stanley at the end of March, which is sold out. Then we've got, of course, the Eastern State Penitentiary in May, sold out. Then we've got we're sold out right now on all current events. However, in June, and these will all be released within the next 7 to 10 days, we're going to have an event in June that will be taking place at the Isetti Ranch in Trout Lake, Washington. We're going to be doing a totally different type of event. It won't be the ghost guys. It'll be UFO hunters. We're going to go out there to Skywatch, and you will be blown away. I'm guaranteeing if we have clear nights, it's going to be a great, great adventure to go out UFO hunting. That'll be taking place in June. Chris, Patrick, Tim, and I are going to be doing small events like we did at the Palmer House. We're going to be going to places. We're working on like the Winchester Mystery House. We are working on the Whaley House. We're going to be working on going out to Tombstone, doing some of the other events throughout the next year. Plus, we're working on a trip to Europe, which will take place either late September or very early October. We're going to be doing it'll be a very small event for the first one. It'll be Richard Felix from TV's Most Haunted and myself out there. We're going to only go with about 10 to 15 of our listeners to go investigate out in Europe. And then once we get the lay of the land, we know exactly where all the best places are for us to do. We have four investigations already pre-set up. Once we do those and we get a good idea of where all the good hotels are in that area and we can know we can build a big event out of it, I want to go back in early spring of 2009 to do a huge event in Europe, especially where these guys' shows are monstrous.
That'd be great.
So we'll be doing that. We're also working on a Hawaii trip. So we're going to be doing that this year. So we're planning a lot of events. Just keep checking out the website at darknessevents.com. Guys, anything you want to add as we've going into the end of the hour? Any thoughts on the paranormal, the direction of the paranormal? Chris, why don't we start with you and then wrap up here with Patch?
Yeah, I'm just excited for this year, you know, dealing with technology and everything and devoting more of my time and everything towards the paranormal, plus, you know, waiting to hear some good news in the next month or so, which I'll be sharing with you, David.
Great.
And but one thing I want to say, too, is people, if you haven't had a chance, check out Patrick Burns' photographs that he takes of some of the locations we go to. I mean, I've been an artist my whole life, have a huge appreciation for it. The photographs that he's taking with this IR photography is incredible, just incredible. And are you going to start selling those pictures?
They are available on my website. Thank you, Chris, for the plug. I'll pay you off after the show.
Dude,
no, I'm being serious. It's amazing.
Oh my God.
I told him I want a photograph of every single one of the places we've been to so I can put them up on my wall.
I wish you
would have been with me every place I went to during Dead Famous because I would have loved to have photographs of all those locations.
Well, we'll go back there. That'll be our goal.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Yes, actually, if people want to see some samples of my work, they can go to my photography website, which is patrick-burns.com. And, thank you so much for bringing that up.
Okay, we have about 1 minute left. Patch, what else can we talk about on the paranormal side for you this year?
I'm really excited about this Frank's box, the hack to the Radio Shack device. I've only been working with it about a week. I got mine about a week ago. I've already torn it apart. In fact, we were calling it the Frankenstein box at the event this past weekend. I am tearing this thing apart, trying to figure out the inner workings of it to make an actual Frank's box. I have a myriad of different ideas of how I want to generate the random frequencies for this thing to scan across, and I'm really geeked out over it, over the possibility and the chance to play with this thing and work with it some more. I think it really represents a very, very fascinating facet of what we're doing right now.
All right. Well, guys, again, Tim and I can't thank you. You guys have become two of our best friends, two great friends to the show. Just love hanging out with you. I want to thank you guys very much for being a part of the events, being a part of the show here with us. Want to thank our lovely camera assistant, Ben, our former assistant is back for the night to hang out and be in the studio with us. It was great to hang out with you, Ben. Thank you for doing great work with the camera this evening. Again, Tim, thank you for all the work you're doing here, and everybody for tuning in, checking out the live webcast. And Patrick, thanks a lot for setting up the live webcast for us so people could actually watch this take place tonight. And thank you all for tuning in. Remember, we'll be back again with you next week. We've got an amazing show I know you're going to love. So check it out. We're going to be talking about the Michigan Dogman. And watch this Wednesday, Monster Quest. Look it up on your local listings. You want to watch this because we're going to be talking about the videos that you're going to see. Also, you can go to look at Michigan-Dogman on the internet, and you'll be blown away. We'll talk to you again. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. Everybody.